Well, that was the opening music to Bicycle Thieves, released in 1948, and directed by Vittorio De Sica, and starring a cast of basically amateurs. Nobody, I think, was a professional actor in this movie. And starring Lamberto Maggiorani and Leonella Carell. And I really liked their son, Enzo Enzo Steiola. I'm going to be doing some editing at the beginning here. And I really liked their little boy, Enzo Steiola, who played Bruno. And a whole bunch of other people, but I've already pretty much butchered a lot of names, so I'll stop there.
Well, it's with apologies to our listeners fluent in Italian that we... It was Lamberto, Enzo, and Leonella.
Yeah, there you go. That sounded better.
Leave it at that.
Yeah, and this is the movie that we're going to be talking about today, and you're listening to Classic Movie Reviews, and you can find us on the internet at classicmoviereviews.net, and on Patreon, just go to patreon.com/classicmoviereviews. And I'm Matt Johnson, coming to you from North Bend today.
And I'm Bob Johnson in Los Angeles, welcoming you all back to Bicycle Thieves, or sometimes it's titled Bicycle Thief, singular, which is a strong neorealistic drama from director Vittorio De Sica, who also did one in 1945, which I have not seen. I need to watch it, called Shoeshine. About two young boys that are making a living on the streets of Rome and their love of horses and wanting to buy one. I need to watch that. It comes in for some really good reviews. But this film, for me, I saw it maybe 15, 20 years ago for the first time. And what I would say about it is it's a very, very realistic portrayal of what it must have been like following World War II in the countries that were devastated by that tragic war, and this action taking place in Rome and the suburbs of Rome. And the director, De Sica, everything he did about it was low budget. He had to he had to find the money himself to do it. Non-professional actors, no studio shots. They probably did a lot of it with one take. And it's so visible in its photography and cinematography. It's so realistic. I mean, it's sometimes painful to watch, but it's... I can't imagine it could be anything but the real thing, the way the streets looked and how people were fighting over trying to get a job, just the basic essentials of living. Anyway, it's quite a movie. We may have different views on this one.
Yeah,
as
I think
we
so.
Talk about it.
I think so. I will say that, wow, the cinematography is amazing. And the, like you said, the visceral feeling of it, you just feel like you're right there in the streets of Rome, and it's shot on location. So, I mean, this was really right after World War II. It came out in 1948. Maybe it was filmed in 1947 and maybe 1948, but this is just a couple years after the war. And, I mean, it's almost documentary in the way that it looks in some shots. It's really well done that way.
And I would just add that the black and white photography is the only way I'd ever want to watch this film.
Oh, for sure.
If they ever colorized it, it would be tragic.
And I have to say that before I read more about it, I just started watching it, and then I found out that these were not professional actors. I was so impressed because it feels very natural. The way he directs them. I guess that he would at times have multiple cameras running just so that he could get the right angle and kind of the right reaction captured, because they weren't professionals. And I guess that the lead actor was pretty nervous about, you know, being in the movie and being able to pull these shots off. And the director actually said that's fine, because that kind of plays into the character, you know. And this poor guy, I mean, like you said, it's probably a pretty accurate portrayal of what life was like after the war in Italy.
I was so taken by his performance, Lamberto's performance. He was a factory worker. That's his job, was in a factory as a turner. I'm not at all sure what that is. And after this film, he was paid $1,000 in U.S. money. And at the factory, they thought he'd made millions, and they had a downturn in business, and they laid him off because they figured other people needed to work more than he did.
Oh my gosh!
So I mean, he was in this. He was caught in this. He did really well in this film, and then it really backfired on his work at the factory. He did make other films, about 15 of them, but he never really hit it like he did this film. I think he finally moved away from film in 1958. Hmm. But to kind of move ahead on the music at the opening of it.
Yeah.
Could there be any more melancholy sounding music than that?
Oh, that's the word I was looking for. Melancholy. Yeah. That really describes a lot of the movie, actually. Yeah.
It sets the tone it's a tragic film in a lot of ways of their lives. But,
yeah. Talk about desperation. You know, I mean, it starts off with, looks like maybe it's an area that had been bombed out, but then they rebuilt some, like, almost like really quick apartment buildings for people to live in, you know, put them up quick. And there's somebody there who maybe works for the government, not sure, who's giving out work. And this one guy, our lead character, Antonio, has a bike. And I guess it's kind of known that he's got this bike. And so the person handing out work is calling his name, Antonio, Antonio. And he's off, I don't know, like across the street.
And one of that sets the tone for his performance.
He's not even
with the group. He's kind of off in his own world.
Yeah, I think that's a really important setup. And so his friend runs over and grabs him and says, "Hey, they're calling you. They got work for you." And he almost doesn't get it, because apparently they had to turn the bike into like a what's that called? Like
a pawn shop.
Yeah. And he just says, "Okay, all right. Yep. I have the bike, you know." So he's just going to figure out a way to get this bike back. Then he goes home he's on his way home, and he meets up with his wife, who was just an absolutely adorable character. I just loved her. She was so supportive of him. She was just a really great actress. I liked her character. And the two of them together had great chemistry as well. Like
they do.
It seemed like they were really married, you know.
Che c'è? Che è successo?
Ma dimmi se non so disgraziato.
Che c'è, Anto?
C'è il posto e non lo posso prendere.
Il posto? Senti, guarda che non ho capito bene. Che hai detto? Fermi, Anto, fermi del momento. Senti, che hai detto? C'è il posto?
È buono pure, municipale.
E beh, se rimedi, Anto. Che non si può rimediare?
Ma che te vuoi rimediare? Ci vuole la bicicletta. Subito. Se non mi presento subito, il posto se lo via un altro.
Che si può fare allora?
E che vuoi fare?
Buongiorno, signora Ricci.
Buongiorno, signore.
And she's determined to get that bike back, so she has these bed sheets that she got as a part of her dowry, and she goes to the pawn shop and turns them in, and then she and her character's name is Maria. Maria and Antonio do a little bit of bartering or haggling over the price they're going to get for him, but he gets enough money to get the bike back. But you remember when she looks in, or he looks into the pawn shop warehouse, and the enormity of what was being turned in. The unemployment at that time after the war in Italy must have been, I don't know, double digit, you know, like...
Oh, for sure.
30, 40, 50%.
That's
just another window into that world of huge unemployment, realistic poverty. And I do want to mention that the director had a strong social political bent, and he was bringing that through in the film as well. The strong family, the difficulty of the work, the situation, the economic issues, just the overall tenor of the times, if you will. Yeah, well, it comes through clearly in this story.
Yeah, for sure. But that scene where they look in kind of behind the pawn shop window, and that guy is climbing shelf that it goes all the way to the ceiling. It's got to be 100 feet. And there's just stacks and stacks and stacks of these sheets and different kinds of clothing. And I thought to myself, you know, there's something about that just seems wrong. Like, there's people out there that are suffering and they've got no bed sheets or no clothing. And here is this pawn shop with like an overabundance. I mean, it's like overflowing with all these goods, right? And there's got to be a message in there somewhere about how those resources are being utilized, you know? At least that's what I took away from it.
Well, it's another piece of the puzzle that was Italy in the 1940s, because the economy was ruined,
yeah,
as it was in almost all of Europe. But, you know, I stepped back from it as a film and I thought, what a simple story.
Super simple.
He needs to have his bike to make enough living, to make enough money to support his wife and two children. And he's kind of a lost soul anyway. He just, that nervousness that he has about playing the role is beautifully a part of his character.
Mm-hmm.
He seems overwhelmed by it. And I think millions of people must have felt the same way.
I imagine that he probably fought in the war. And I'm kind of guessing that he's probably a bit still in shock, like PTSD from that. Because there's a lot of points in the movie where he just has this vacant look on his face. Like he's just completely overwhelmed with what's going on. And I think that's a part of what the story is about, is like all these people that have just experienced this hugely traumatic event. Their country is, you know, completely ruined, and now they have to try to make their way. And I think this movie takes place over the course of, like, what, 3 days maybe? Or
At the most. I wanted to talk a little bit about the actor that played his son.
Yeah, he was great.
He was outstanding. And You know, he was a part of the story throughout. And when the next day, when Antonio goes off to work on his bike, his little boy, who's 9 years old, Bruno, goes with him.
Yeah.
And he drops Bruno off at this gas station sort of place, and Bruno goes into this little cabin kind of thing and comes out, and he works there.
He does some job there,
I don't know, washing windows or whatever at this gas station. I mean, he's 9 years old.
He's wise beyond his age. That scene where he's like working on the bike, so they get the bike back and they bring it to the apartment and they've got it up on this little stand to tune it up, and he's tuning it up, the son, and he's the way he's talking, it's like he's a 50-year-old man.
Papà, ha visto che ci hanno fatto?
Che ci hanno fatto?
Una ammaccatura.
Che ci vuoi fare? Magari c'era.
No, non c'era. Questa è una botta che gli hanno dato. Chissà come le tengono. Io gli avrei detto. Mica riparano le riparazioni.
Ma te vuoi stare zitto?
Sì, mi sto zitto. Io gli avrei detto.
Yes.
They put a dent in it. They need to pay you for that. That dent wasn't there before. You know, and it was his mannerisms and everything. It was just so awesome. He did such a good job.
I think that's really also a part of the picture. I remember when I worked in Chicago, one of the people I worked with was about that same age when World War II devastated the Netherlands. And he lived in Holland. And he would recount how they had no food and they were in fear for their lives from the Germans. And he seemed like he was much older than his age would have been at the time I worked with him. And Bruno he's had to figure out how to survive in a city the size of Rome.
Yeah.
Pretty much on his own.
Crazy. So
it's a wonderful character. And it just draws me into the beauty of this film.
So there's something interesting about the title of the movie. So whether it's Bicycle Thief or Bicycle Thieves, it sets your expectation that this bike is going to get stolen. You know that this bike's going to get stolen by the name of the movie. So from the moment he gets the bike, there's this tension. I just felt this tension of like, he's going to do something dumb. I just know it. He's going to leave it out. Somebody's going to steal it. And then it was just like, well, when is it going to happen?
And that's reinforced before it is stolen, when he parks it along the wall and he asks some stranger, a young man on the street, can you watch my bike for me while I go upstairs? I'm like, oh, when I first saw the film, I said, this is when it gets stolen.
I thought so too.
So it's foreshadowing that event, because you know it's coming.
And so that raises a question in my head as I was watching it. What responsibility does he have in kind of the tragedy that happens with him getting his bike stolen? You know, like,
yes,
you know,
that adds to the, yeah, absolutely. Because where he parks it when it is stolen, it's far enough away that he can't really keep an eye on it. What he should have done, as I looked at it, is put it right under the ladder.
Yes, yes. That's what I thought, too. And I would have actually had a rope or something tied from the bike to the ladder.
To the ladder, yeah.
You know, it's like, this is your livelihood. You got to have this bike to keep this job. You need this bike to drop your son off at work. Like, this is everything. And I think he's just so, like, kind of out of it in a way. Like, he's not able to, like, realize how important it is to hold on to this bike. And so he does something that, it's not necessarily dumb, but it's also not the smartest thing to do, right? Like, there would have been a few simple things he could have done to make sure that he could have kept that job. Yeah, that was frustrating.
Just an aside, I've known people over my lifetime that kind of had that same problem. They just never quite hold it together.
Yeah.
But anyway, I digress. So he's up putting up these posters, and it pays him enough biweekly to make ends meet, and they get some kind of an allowance, a food allowance or some kind of an allowance. So it's a good job for them.
Yeah.
And he ends up up on the ladder, and this young man comes and takes the bike. And then everything breaks loose, and Antonio's chasing him down the street and gets the help of somebody in a car and some other guy, and they can't catch up with him. And it's you just want to scream at I wanted to scream at the guy, go faster.
Yeah. But you knew it was too late at faster. That point. Yeah. I think that the guy that was helping him, not the guy in the car, but the other guy, was actually a part of the thing. Like, he was working with the guy that stole the bike, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, okay.
So he kind of misdirected the car to go in that tunnel when the bike had gone the other way. And then he's like, I swear I thought it went in this tunnel. But, you know.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. I hadn't thought of that. Then to kind of forward us to when Antonio's looking for help, and he goes to that strange little theater dance hall and meets up with his friend. And the whole time that his friend was involved, they got really involved in helping him. I wondered, is this friend of his, I forget the actor's name or this character's name, is he a member of the mob or is he a friend? Or is he some political figure that is known in the community? But that whole set of scenes in that dance area was with them practicing that simple little play. And,
it was weird.
And then all these guys in another room come down the hall and they have a big disagreement. They can't come in now. It's a rehearsal. It just, it's more aspects of what life must have been like. So many people out of work.
Yeah.
And so much, I don't know, just hardship.
I had a feeling that that guy was somebody that he knew from the war, like a friend of the family. Maybe he seemed like he worked sanitation, like he was on a garbage truck, I feel like, and maybe was part of had a government job. But he seemed like he was more well connected and more well off, and he had a bunch of friends that were going to help him look for the bike. He knew exactly where to go to look for the bike and what to look for. And
it had to be done almost right away.
Yeah, and he knew that they were going to take the bike apart. So he had the son. The son was looking for, like, the bike pump and the bell, and they were going to look for the frame, and then somebody else was going to look for the wheels. And, you know, they're at this kind of bizarre market area, and there were so many bikes there. It was like, good luck finding your bike. I mean, there's like 1,000 bikes there. So it was kind of
overwhelming. 100 people looking for their bikes.
Yeah. And then he thinks that he finds it, and he's like trying to get the guy to show him the serial number on the frame of the bike. And the guy's like, no, I'm not going to show you that. Like, I don't have to show you that. Then a policeman comes over and sort of like mediates the thing. And it turns out it's not his bike. But it, you know, it's just kind of more of this frustration that you feel that no matter how much help he gets, he's not going to find this bike. It's just gone.
There's so many of them floating around.
Yeah.
I love the scene as they've decided that bike does not belong to him and the police officer's left. And then his group of friends are leaving. This really older man turns around and says something to the guy that was working on the bike.
Amico, a Piazza Vittorio c'è tutta gente onesta.
E là sapete, Fides, ricordate di Fides.
Che sto a
fare? Yeah. The guy basically gives him the what for. It was just the interplay was perfect. It was just a detail of what a lot of life would be like at that time. That old guy was, I don't know, he had to be like, he looked like he was about 85, 90 years old. Then he wanders off.
That was a totally unnecessary scene to move the story forward, but it added so much to like the atmosphere.
Yes.
And there's a lot of little things like that in the movie that They don't necessarily move the story forward, but they just make you feel like you're in that world. You feel like this is real, like this is what it would have really been like.
Yeah, and it's unrelenting. And at the same time, Antonio is also kind of naive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's very trusting. He thinks the police are going to solve the problem. Turns out that, you know, they can't do much either.
He goes to file a police report, and the police officer's like, great.
Oh, yes.
You filed your police report. Now, you should probably go look for your bike. And Antonio's like, well, aren't you going to go look for it? And he goes, it would take the whole mobile unit to go out there and look for it, and we probably still wouldn't find it. So good luck, you know.
That was... Yeah, and then he leaves. That everything in this film seems to me to be what it would have been like
mm-hmm.
at that period in time. So he's back looking on his own.
Yeah, he's got to walk back all the way home.
Oh yeah, it was.
And his
son, like it was 5 miles.
They look so exhausted, and then he drops his son off at home, and then he goes back out. And I think that's when he goes to talk to his friend. And then Maria shows up, and she's very upset because she knows this is, you know, bad. And then the next morning they go out to that market and look for his bike and can't find it. And he's kind of despondent. He and his son then, I think it was like on a Sunday, so he didn't have work that day. But he spends the entire day just going from place to place looking for his bike and who stole it. And what's kind of amazing is that, spoilers here, he finds the guy that stole his bike, like, yeah. Amazingly.
He's standing in the rain along a wall.
Yeah.
And he sees the guy with the bike.
And he tries to catch him, but of course he gets away.
Yep. So Antonio, again, just sort of gives up in with that, because he can't get anywhere.
Yeah.
His anger is now really growing.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of boils over to the point where he ends up slapping his son in the face.
I know that, yeah.
That was painful to watch.
Non sarà mica volato.
Non sarebbe la stata nappia a minestra.
E stai zitta pure te.
Morti, no.
E mo che fai?
Mannaggia.
Anna, poi cammina.
No, gioia.
Anna, moglie via.
No.
Vuoi venire o non vuoi venire?
No, non vuoi venire.
Bruno. Anna, mo muovete. Ma guarda che razza tra i cattini. Andiamo.
No, perché mi hai meritato?
Perché te lo meritavi. Anna, mo cammina.
No, gioia, sì. Vattene via, sì.
Avanti, muovete.
Yeah.
That was painful to watch, and I thought... That actor, Enzo Steola, oh man, he did such an amazing job of, like, that look on his face after that happened, and then just this withdrawing away from his dad and not wanting to be around him, and I felt that, like, that was painful to watch.
That was shocking when I first saw the film the first time, because he took all his frustration out on his 9-year-old son. With that slap. I mean, that was horrific. And the poor boy was just, he wanted to run away. He had nowhere to go.
Yeah.
And then it gets worse, because then there's this potential drowning taking place in the river.
Yeah.
Of a young boy.
That was weird.
And Antonio thinks it's Bruno.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we go through that.
Yeah. That was rough. Again, I mean, like, it just all feels so real. There's some scenes in there, like with the drowning, that it was like, oh, this is like a news documentary report on the scene, you know. But he was talking to this older guy, and he ends up getting information from the older guy about where the kid lives that stole his bike. So now he knows, like, okay, I know where... this guy lives, my bike is probably there, so I'm going to go there and confront this guy. And the thief was played by Vittorio Antonucci. And yeah, he did a good job too. Like, again, even though he knows who this, he knows this is the guy, 100%, it is the guy. And he goes to confront him. Of course, the bike's not there, you know. So it's just his word against this thief. And, you know, even the police show up and there's this big confrontation with, like, I don't know, it felt like 20 or 30 guys were going to beat up Antonio because they're all friends with the thief.
Pure il pericolo della querela per calunnia.
Andatelo via, se ne ammazzo! Andatelo via, se ne ammazzo! Meglio mio! Anima benedetta di mamma tua!
Ma te ne voglio andare!
E fattene!
Ma dirà giusto, no!
Prima di parlare, sei sicuro di quello che dici? Se sei così pregnore di fatte prega la bicicletta, adesso fatte prega pure il portafoglio e vieni qua a baccagliare.
Ma che te butta di campare?
Ti piacchi, va mette del cento!
Luce,
no, vuole sforzare calore a quello là.
You know, just his son Bruno is like scared, you know, for his dad's life, and he runs off and gets the police to come and break it up. And again, I mean, I feel like the police officer was willing to help. He, like, took them up to the apartment and looked around and couldn't find the bike. And, I mean, it's like, well, what are you going to do? I mean, you can't really arrest this guy just because you said that he stole your bike.
I find that whole setup in that part of the film, which maybe lasted, what, 6-7 minutes,
mm-hmm.
really another picture of what it was like, because the police officer goes upstairs and in order to have privacy he asks the owner of the apartment to leave.
Yeah.
So the apartment now is the accuser, the son, and the police officer alone. And I'm like, wow.
No due process, no warrant.
Right?
You need to leave so we can search your apartment. Whoa.
And meanwhile this crowd, the other thing I thought of is there must have been these neighborhoods with clans or members of similar families that kind of grouped together for security, because all these people were on the side of the bike thief.
Oh, yeah.
And they looked like, you know, they were going to defend him with all their might.
After this, it kind of goes into this montage with some music of him and his son kind of wandering through the streets. And it starts to focus more and more on how there are all of these bikes around town, and you know, I mean, it gives you the knowledge that Antonio is thinking about stealing a bike himself. Like, he's that desperate. Like,
yeah.
And I actually had that thought earlier in the movie. Is like, well, what do you do? Like, it made me realize like how you could get to a point where you would do something like that. Like, you could be so desperate and so at your wit's end where stealing a bike would seem like the right thing to do. And that was kind of an amazing thing that the movie was able to do, is to really put you into his shoes to the point where you're like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. Like, that's probably what you would think you should do. Yeah.
And that turns into another misfire.
And he can't even pull that off.
As soon as he takes the bike,
he can't do it.
Everybody in that street was after him.
Oh, yeah, and he almost gets arrested.
The man was just never going to get it.
Yeah, he almost gets arrested. But his son, thank goodness.
They're taking him away.
Yeah.
And the owner of the bike kind of saves him, because he realizes that it's not worth having him go off to jail, which is where he would have gone.
Well, and it's...
And his little boy is... I mean, the little Enzo looks... not Enzo.
Bruno.
Bruno, sorry. Bruno. Just, he looks like he's going to die if his dad is taken away.
Yeah, I mean, it probably feels that way to him.
Oh, yeah. I remember being 9 years old.
Yeah.
And it was... something like this would be overwhelming. So the man that had the bike stolen says, oh, let's just forget it. Just just it's not that important because he doesn't think it's going to work out for the father to be arrested, taken away, and the son left on the street alone with his mom and a little infant baby back in this apartment.
Yeah.
And the music throughout this film, the music is like, talk about well matched to the atmosphere of the plot. That would be this music. One quick thing on the way it ends with them walking off into the twilight in that crowd, the two of them.
Yeah.
Apparently, De Sica was a big fan of Charlie Chaplin.
Oh, okay.
He put that ending in as a kind of a tip of the hat to Chaplin's ending on some of his films.
Like in The Tramp. Yeah.
They walk away from the camera in kind of a forlorn, melancholy way. You get to go first on your, because I want to.
So I have to split my rating. I have to split my rating on this one. So I thought the acting, the cinematography, the directing, the on-location shooting, the simple story, 10, you know, like, and I would say that my enjoyment of the film, though, was like a 2. Like, I kind of hated the ending. I found this movie to be so nihilistic. It's just, I don't know, like, I'm trying to understand like what the message of the movie is or what I'm supposed to take away from the movie. And the first 20 to 30 minutes, there's like this kind of hopeful tone to it. He's got the bike. He's got the job. He's, you know, it seems like this is, you know, this is going to work out. And then the last hour of the movie is just this onslaught of every possible thing that could go wrong for him, you know, and no amount of help from anybody is gonna fix it. And then it ends, and it's like I was just left there looking at the screen like, what the hell, you know, like there's no even little bit of ray of light of hope at the end of the movie. And I was like, I like movies that are dramatic like this, but I would have, if they could have just, as a film, as something that I want to watch to enjoy and kind of go on this journey with them, setting aside like whether or not this was like real, like life or not, because like as a film, I would have liked to have some small glimmer of hope at the end of it, of like, even if he just looked at his son and got down on his knee and said, you know what, it's going to be okay. Like, it'll work out, like, somehow. And maybe that's just totally out of character for him, and it wouldn't have made sense. But, man, I was, like, depressed at the end of this movie. I just felt like, I mean, they're living in, like, this hellscape. And so I enjoyed the movie up till, like, the last 5 to 10 minutes, and then I was like, just feeling kind of angry at it and depressed, and I just felt like this might be the most nihilistic movie that I've ever watched. So that's kind of where I'm at with it.
Well, I think your explanation is spot on for how you feel about how it's made and how it turns out in the ending and all.
Yeah.
Well, my view on the film is, from what I've read about World War II and what happened in Europe and what was going on at that point of time, this could not be a more accurate reflection of the total awfulness of the war and the aftermath of the war and its impact on not just this family of four, but millions and millions of people whose lives were either torn apart with family members brutally murdered or murdered in the war. So I think for a film, for me, it's a 10 because it's so accurately portraying what I think a lot of tens of millions of people went through. And it's certainly is not... well, let me put it this way. A film like this could not have been made in the U.S. because the production code, the Hays office, would have said, you can't end it this way.
Yeah.
And fortunately, because it was made in Italy, it ended this way. Did I feel good at the end of that film? Hell no. I mean, it was absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
But I believe that's what he was going for in his film.
Yeah. No,
so when
you
left the audience, I wish I had seen this film in a theater just to see what the audience reaction would have been like as everybody left that theater like...
In tears?
Totally depressed or in tears or so angry they wanted to scream. But
like,
anyway,
I 100% agree with all of that. Like, I'm not disagreeing with the fact that this is probably really realistic in the sense of what he would have been going through. It's just that, man, with everything going on in the world right now and just like the uncertainty and the craziness of what's happening, then to watch this movie and just like feel that way, like I don't know, like I think it's just more about me. Like, it's not so much a reflection on the movie. Like, I probably don't really want to be watching movies that make me feel that, like, sad at the end right now.
That are that visceral. Well, this movie could actually easily be transported to today in the Ukraine.
For sure. Yep, for sure. That's what was hard. I think that's really what was hard for me to watch this movie. Anyway, I said enough.
Well, I think we could move away from it with the next one. We talked about doing Only Angels Have Wings from 1939. I think that would be an appropriate segue.
So anyway, yeah, like I think the next movie is also a war movie, but it's more a movie about redemption and love and kind of some other things that might be a little easier to watch right now.
I agree.
That was Bicycle Thieves or The Bicycle Thief. And yeah, really excellent movie. Just be prepared for what you're going to see when you go into it and know kind of what it is. That would be my advice. And coming to you from North Bend, this is Matt.
And here in Los Angeles, this is Bob wishing everybody happy movie watching.
Man, it's amazing to me how movies are so timeless. Like, this movie was it could have been made this year. Like, it was so like of the moment for me and gave me all the feels and like really made me invested in it and really made me angry at the end, you know. So it was like,
well, you know,
wow.
I'm thinking, for me, my reaction, like the one you had, is I have it every time. I've watched it twice. When I watch Apocalypse Now.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I can't watch it anymore. It's the same way you're feeling about this one.
This was actually a really fun movie to review because it's such a, there's so much to talk about. And,
oh, there is. And we can do another hour on it.
Oh, easily. And I didn't even go into some of the stuff that I had thought about talking about just because we could be here for 2 hours. But there was that one scene where they're in that garbage truck and it's raining like crazy. And The driver keeps saying, we never can catch a break, you know. Yeah. It's just we're always losing, you know. And it was like, it was about halfway through the movie, and I'm like, well, this is the message of the movie right here. Like, he's basically saying, this is the message of the movie.
Hopeless.
We can never catch a break. It's hopeless. We're never going to be on the winning side. It's just, you know, it's like, wow. Yeah.
Another scene that we didn't talk about is when they go to the church. What was going on in that church? Were they having a raffle or a lottery?
That was weird. Like a marriage?
I don't know.
Like,
what the hell was that?
Yeah.
Couldn't figure that out.
And they didn't want him to leave, but he was trying to leave, and then he's trying to talk to that guy, and they're like yelling at him, and it's like, what is going on?
That's a part of the culture I never was